This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
By the Book on BFM 89.9.
Hello, everyone. You are listening to By the Book. I'm Lee Chui Lin. As always, with me, my fellow journey woman into the pages of books, Sharmila Ganesan.
Hello.
And today we have a guest with us. We have Sumitra Selvaraj, who is here for our monthly book club.
Hello.
We are talking about a book that's pretty special, actually. Mm-hmm. And it is special for a number of reasons. I'm going to just list them off. Firstly, it's the first book from the Gulf to have won the Man International
that's
Booker
right.
Prize.
Yeah.
She is the first Omani woman to have been translated into English. And so she's also going to be in our shores very soon. But we are talking today about Joka Alharty's Celestial Bodies, mm-hmm. Which is just a tremendous reading experience,
and
I thought.
Thank you for suggesting it, Sumitra. I don't think we would have thought to do a book club on it if you hadn't sort of pushed it on us gently.
I'm glad you liked it. I've been trying to make a concerted effort to kind of broaden my own reading habits. And, you know, for a long while I'd been, you know, trying to specifically read female authors, but I found that I was reading a lot of Indian authors, and when this book came along, I thought it's about time that I started kind of exposing myself to a new worldview. And what a worldview it was!
I think there were a lot of things about it that I didn't expect, not least of which the worldview and the world building, because it just felt like somebody had taken me by the hand and took me into a house in which I would never have been invited otherwise. That's how it felt. It felt like I was looking at the inside of a family life, looking at the inside of a country and a world that I was just so unfamiliar with. And yet there were moments that were also so familiar because it's the world of women. It's the world of women talking to one another, dealing with one another, and the men in it. It was a really enjoyable experience for me.
I think the unfamiliarity was really what struck me very early on and kind of was one of the points that kept me wanting to know more. It's actually a very small book.
Yeah.
Even though it's a multi-generational saga, it's actually a very thin book that you can read very fast. And what I loved about it is, for the first time in a very long time, I had that experience of an insight into a world or a culture or a part of our world that I really know so very little about. In this case, Oman. And Oman from, I think, the possibly the late 1800s, all the way to modern times. And it's a time where the country has actually changed so much in that time. So I feel like I was taken on this whirlwind tour through time and space of a country that I actually know so little about.
But in a premise, as you mentioned, Lynn, that's wholly familiar. To me, it felt very Victorian. Three sisters on the cusp of marriage, each one having a different personality. And so that scene is set right away. Like you, I felt like I was familiar with this idea of women talking to each other, but the way that they spoke to each other and the things that they said and they did really, really blew my mind.
I also think it's important at this point to just point out that while we're talking about a multi-generational saga, that kind of implies that we're going chronologically and we're not.
Yeah, no, not at all.
Yeah, because when I read the back of the book, I thought, okay, so here's what we're going to do, right? We're going to set off in, times where slave owning was common. We're going to talk about maybe the Berbers, and then we're going to move towards modern life and cell phones and all the rest of it. And that is not how things happen. Instead, you're jumping back and forth, making it all seem like, I guess, part of a thread, right? I mean, that tells you, I suppose, in a way, what Oman is, what it was, what it still is because of what it was, you know, and it's all, I think, a big jumble for that very reason, the way that the story is told.
It doesn't, the past is not something that's been left behind. The future is not something that's already arrived. It's all sitting quite uncomfortably alongside each other. It's all tangled up with each other. And so are the people. So many of them are going through these huge transitions at such a fast pace. I think one of the male characters, and he's got these chapters where he is the narrator, the viewpoint is through him, Abdullah. I mean, he was literally born when, you know, in a small fictional village where they were, you know, riding camels, right?
That's right.
And then he's also simultaneously in our present flying airplanes for business.
Yes.
It's such a bizarre sort of, even as a reader, you're thrown from one to the other. It's did that structure work for you completely, or was that something difficult?
I struggled a little with the nonlinear sort of time frame, for sure. I was very, very glad for the family tree at the beginning of the book. I kept on having to go back and refer to that because some of the names did sound quite similar as well. So it was important to be able to make a distinction there. But the nonlinear time frame messed with me because it was very bold. Sometimes within a chapter, it would jump 10 years and it would be unapologetic in the way it jumped forward.
A character would be talking about something and you'd think they're talking about it in the present, but actually it's happened way in the past and then it's a reminiscence.
It worked for me up to a point. It worked for me when we were talking about emotional lives. When we're on that subject of reminiscence, whenever we're talking about things that had a huge impact in the past that continue to reflect in what's happening today, we haven't actually talked about the storyline. We probably should at some point. But I'm just going to say that there are deaths, there are people who are abandoned, and that happens through generations. It's not just one. There's violence. And there's violence, I think, between parent and child.
Yes.
And the violence is not necessarily always physical. Sometimes it's emotional. And so sometimes that worked for me, right, in terms of being able to see that somebody from 20 years ago did this to somebody who's doing it right now. Mm-hmm. And that was when that kind of weird, where am I, who am I, worked for me. Other times I was just like, wait, they died? Wait, what? And so, yeah, up to a point.
I actually enjoyed it tremendously. I liked it a lot, primarily because of that feeling of never quite knowing where you were. I felt like I was one of the characters almost, constantly in a state of flux, constantly trying to figure out where exactly I belonged within this sphere.
So while we're talking about characters, how much can we tell people about the story?
Yikes.
Such as it is.
Three sisters. That's a good start.
And you started us off with that. Three sisters, each of whom are eventually settled into marriages by the family.
Very quickly, as the book progresses, actually.
But also the village that they grew up in.
Yes.
And all the different people there, many of whom are their relatives.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not an easy story to sum up.
No, because nothing happens. You know, we're not heading towards a climax, per se.
No.
We're not. It's not got a classic structure like, oh, it's all going to end in a marriage. The marriages happen early on.
Yeah.
It's not going to end in a funeral. The funerals happen in the middle of the book.
Yeah.
So it's not got that classic. It's not a family drama even. It's just the telling of lives, I think, in many ways.
I think telling of lives is a great way of describing it, really. And telling of lives that we often don't hear very much about and from perspectives that you don't get very often. Because what I really like about this book is not just that while it is about the lives of women, one of the things I like a lot about it is that it completely doesn't disregard the lives of men either.
Yeah.
Men who are also similarly caught within this web of patriarchy, this web of expectation and requirement. And what that does to them. And it doesn't minimize the women's stories, which I think is also a big feat, because often these tensions become sort of like, okay, then which story is more important? Somehow this book manages to weave both of those together very well.
The telling of lives aspect for me was especially compelling because, the title alludes to it, Celestial Bodies, right? Each one of these characters orbits around another character so strongly where they cannot escape this character, even if they physically escape, you know, emotionally and mentally, they cannot escape. Their lives are so intertwined throughout years, throughout decades, sometimes throughout centuries, you know, the sins of the grandfather, the sins of the father catching up with the child in the future. And that one character talks about it later in the book about how it's almost an inexplicable but then a relationship that you cannot escape from.
That's interesting, partly because in many ways, when you at first blush, none of the marriages, none of the romantic relationships in the book are at all romantic.
No.
They are based on...
Convenience.
They're based on patriarchal notions of, you know, just kind of, we have daughters, we need to marry them off. They're based on sexual violence. They're based on slavery. Yeah. So, you know, at first glance, all of it is incredibly just unromantic, you know. But the way that the story is written, especially in the romantic sequences, especially in the moments where somebody falls in love... For example, there is a telling of a man who ends up being in this very, Abdullah, who ends up being in this unrequited situation with his wife.
Yeah, a marriage where he's actually quite deeply in love with his wife.
Yes.
And she...
Is rather in love with her sewing machine.
That's, yes.
For a time. Yeah. And then after that, she's in love with her house. And then, right. You know.
And primarily because she was... in love with someone else,
yes,
and was married off to him.
But that description of the first time he sees her, and how he just sees, what is the phrase? I think something like pain, how he saw her pain radiating out from her. And I think, you know, Sumitra, what you were saying earlier about the orbiting, that was really kind of one of those strong moments where you see that happening, where you see somebody who everyone else sees as a plain spinster, fundamentally, literally spinning threads over her sewing machine, and a man walks in and is just entranced by her, and nobody else sees it. And it's that unseen connection that even she doesn't fully get that ties them together, that results in them having children, building a life together, and I think at least one of them questioning the meaning of it.
And even having another sister getting involved in a relationship where you know it's one-sided. The man doesn't really want to be with her.
Right.
He's seeing her as a convenient means
to... and spends half his time with a foreign girlfriend in Canada.
And yet...
She stays with him over years and has children with him. Mm. And how that ultimately ends up, and I don't want to spoil it for people, is also its own kind of, I don't know, victory or tragedy. I don't know how to describe it because...
That chapter pulled me along like just whoop, you know, because I just wanted to know. I wanted to know. And when it ended, I thought, you know when something leaves you feeling aghast but also really pleased? know, it had that impact, which is
Didn't know whether I wanted to cheer for her or throttle her, basically.
Yes. Which is kind of the impact of reading this book. We're talking today about Joka Alharty's Celestial Bodies. We're doing our best to not spoil it, which is an odd one because we've just kind of established that the story is pretty difficult to even tell, much less spoil. But there are pleasures within it that I don't think we want to reveal too much of. If you've read it or if you plan to, do let us know. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio. We have been receiving some mail recently and getting very happy about it. You can also write to us at buythebook@bfm.my.
Building First World Mindsets. BFM 89.9.
Hello, everyone. You are listening to Buy the Book with Lynn and Sharmila, and today our guest Sumitra, who brought in this month's book for our book club, which is Joka Alharty's Celestial Bodies. We've been kind of discussing our way through this very slim but very fascinating book. And something I wanted to bring up, and it was I knew we were going to be discussing this, and I just wanted to kind of push it forth right away because it was one of the most immediate experiences for me. This made me sympathize with my mother because I was just thinking about how when you're a child and you view your parents' marriage or your mom treats you a certain way and you don't know why, you don't know. Maybe it happened because she was 17 and something happened to her or the experiences that she had been through in her life. And that's one of the beauties of a multi-generational book that jumps so much because with Maya, for example, who we were speaking about earlier, who is married to Abdullah and doesn't particularly love him, although he adores her. She has a daughter whom she names London.
London, yes.
In honour of the man that she did actually love and who went there.
Which is a little microaggression in itself, isn't it?
And everyone else, of course, hates the name and they're like, who would ever name their child something like London?
Right. I mean, is it even a microaggression or is it just an out-and-out aggression? But there are moments where they talk about that relationship in you know, little bits and bobs about, I guess, the push between London's more modern. I mean, she goes on to become a doctor.
Yes.
And her mother, who had her life arranged for her, who never learned to read, if I'm not mistaken, who kind of left school. And I'm not saying my mom was any of those things, but it just had me feeling a lot of empathy and a lot of fascination, I suppose, for the people in our families who came before us, and the fact that they all had lives of their own, and just seeing little glimpses of it, kind of, that was one of the best things about it for me.
Mm. Not just maybe having lives of their own, but perhaps being forced into those lives before they reach an age or a maturity where they're able to handle those lives. If you think about young children who are pushed into positions of responsibility because of strife in their family or even medical problems, anything. It starts giving you a good idea of what the women in this book endure, that they really don't want to handle these hardships that are thrust upon them, but handle them they must.
Then I think also it then leads to a situation where simultaneously they are all caught in a system that's oppressive, but they're also stacked against each other, aren't they?
Yeah.
Because in that classic sense of what happens when you pit people against each other, these women have to struggle, and struggle is the only thing they know. And everyone in some way is a threat to even their friends, even their best friend with London and her issues. And this is a girl who sits squarely in modern times. She's afraid to talk to her best friend about the problem she's having with her lover, I suppose, and then husband, because she's afraid that her friend would judge her. And that was something that was so familiar.
Yeah.
In fact, so much of that, the emotional beats that these characters go through are so familiar that it almost normalizes this otherwise quite unfamiliar world that we're reading about.
Guys, we haven't talked about Zarifa.
So,
yes, and I feel like we need to bring her up because she is an extreme example of everything that we've been talking about. Because so far, we're talking about things that we at least have a passing familiarity with, the idea of an arranged marriage, the idea of that push and pull between modern and, you know, less modern and conservative. Mm-hmm. We've got all these things going on. But Zarifa is a slave.
She is.
Who is the head of the household in many ways, who runs her life, who runs her household, and who is in many ways the ultimate person who is pitted against someone else, and who behaves in very specific, very suspicious ways. But through it all, she also has this. Being a slave is a big part of her identity.
Yes. She refuses to actually give it up, even when her son... I mean, first of all, slavery is outlawed during the course of her lifetime. And then her son actually sort of completely disavows that identity and moves, and she doesn't want to.
I don't think she knows how to, Sharmila.
Yeah.
I don't think she knows any other life than one that is either tethered to somebody or with a giant safety net under her, because otherwise she would be adrift. I mean, she has choose the idea of freedom because to her, her life has been in service. Service at a high power differential, but in service all the same.
And yet, within the space of, within the womanly space that she occupies, within the sphere, she is very much a queen bee. I mean, in certain pockets, right? She's the one who leads prayers. She's the one who takes care of new mothers. She's the one who has shaped Abdullah to be everything that he is in many ways, because she was a counterpoint to his father's coldness, to his father's anger.
She gets to call the shots with Abdullah's wife's mother.
Yes, everything except the naming of London.
Yes.
that she couldn't control. But yeah, I mean, Zarifa, I thought, was a really fascinating character. And then you also have Kamar, who lives outside of societal norms.
The Bedouin woman.
Yes, yeah. Who gets dragged into it anyway, yeah. in some ways.
So for me, Zarifa was one of those characters that I started off feeling, you know, every time she came onto the page, I was very confronted. Mm. And I'm like, oh my God, why is this woman like this?
She is very confronting. Yeah.
But by the end of the book, she'd actually grown to be one of the characters I can't say I'd grown fond of, but it's like you understand her so much and you feel for her so much that I like, as a character, she's a very well-developed character. Mm. And you feel for her, even if you don't like her, which I think is saying a lot.
On this topic of slavery, I was horrified to learn that Oman only outlawed slavery in 1970.
Yeah. That's something I only learned from this book.
And, you know, I was trying to wrap my head around the fact, I did a little bit of reading up on the slave trade that happened out of Oman and Zanzibar at that time, with shared borders. And, you know, what really got me was the fact that, you know, Omani slaves were sold in Africa.
Yeah.
And it bugged me that this is a continent that has already suffered so much and was continuing to suffer, and yet they were perpetuating this trade.
Actually, that's a thing that comes across very well in this book, the propensity of people who have suffered to perpetuate suffering. And you know, while slavery is not an overt theme, I feel like it suffuses everything you read about, that this legacy that this community and culture has carried with it, this of not caring about people, of not viewing others as quite equal to themselves, and in so many ways is ultimately what shapes, you know, what happens.
Even if slavery wasn't a grand theme, though, captivity is.
Yes.
So yeah. many of yeah. the characters are captives in their own way. Even Zarifa, who we just mentioned, this inability of hers to break out of her history, her legacy, to me is captivity.
Or you're taken captive. You know, for example, there is a story of a bride who is forcibly removed from a house after
yes.
she's been, you know, after she's said, actually, she doesn't even get a say in it. She doesn't get to decide whether she gets
After
married
her,
or not.
Her family decides that she should marry someone else.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
However, a different part of her family decides that they want... Yeah, then they storm the house and essentially force her to marry the person that she does.
Like a commodity.
Yeah. And we are running out of time, but I just wanted to very quickly touch on men. We briefly alluded to it earlier. We mentioned Abdullah. But I don't think we can talk about the book without talking about how intensely the book also paints the suffering of men, because that's very clear when you read it. My sympathy is actually, in some ways, the women have each other,
mm-hmm.
for better or for worse, mm-hmm. And sometimes it is indeed for worse. But when it comes to the men, they're pitted against society at large within this space, because if you are not sort of, in many ways, a warlord, if you don't behave like a warlord, life just doesn't go well for you.
No, and you can see that in Abdullah is the biggest example of it, that sort of spiral that he goes through, you know, over the course of the book. But even in all the other male characters, you know, whether it's the three daughters, the three girls' father, or other male characters just pop up for a couple of pages. Just this loneliness. The men are so intensely lonely, and they resort to either violence externally or violence within themselves, because that's the only thing they know.
Well, whether it was the 1800s or 1900s or current day, we're still talking about the same problems when it comes to this idea of men not having enough of a platform or enough of an opportunity, ability to be able to say what they really feel,
yeah.
not think, feel.
Yeah.
On that note, we've been talking about Joka Alharty's Celestial Bodies. Just a quick mention of the fact that she's actually going to be headlining the Georgetown Literary Festival. That's happening from the 21st to the 24th of November. So you have time to grab the book, read it, go.
Highly recommend it.
Really, yeah. I think we all do. Safe to
yes,
say, yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And it's an easy read, so do it.
Yeah, it's a great book. It's unlike anything I've read this year. I really enjoyed it. So Joka Alharty's Celestial Bodies, if you've read it, if you plan to, let us know. You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899. You can tweet us at BFM Radio, write to us at buythebook@bfm.my. that brings us to footnotes. So since we've been talking about a book that is set almost entirely in Oman, which is a country that I think, you know, sort of only recently opened up a little bit more to the rest of the world, we thought it would be a good time to, I think, just talk about books that have that same quality, that introduce us to places, countries, societies that perhaps we were less familiar with or that we hadn't been to before. Sharmila, you want to start?
Well, I thought I'd bring up a book that I only read quite recently. It's called The Tiger's Wife by Tia Obrecht. I hope I'm saying her name right. It's basically a sort of a magic realist fantasy set during the Balkan War. They never name the country that it's supposed to be about, but it's essentially Yugoslavia.
I grew up in Yugoslavia for the first 7 years of my life. And we left, you know, and moved to Cyprus and Egypt, and that's where I sort of grew up in a very nomadic way. But a lot of this is based on vague childhood memories and then things that I've reabsorbed since going back to visit my grandmother who still lives there. A lot of writers that I know have told me that the first book you write about your childhood, whether you want to or not, it calls you back. And that definitely ended up happening. My grandfather died, so it was a very difficult way to get called back to writing about childhood, but it would have been impossible to write the book without reconnecting to the place.
What the book does is sort of weave in both historical events with folklore, local mythology, and the story of a girl and her grandfather. And the structure of the book kind of goes back and forth, and it draws on the stories that the grandfather used to tell her and uses that as a way to talk about this war that this country is going through and how that affects the people, how it differs. You know, people that were previously of one country were now being pitted against each other. And again, it had that same quality that Celestial Bodies did, because I, to my knowledge, actually have not read any other fiction set in the Balkans, particularly not during this era. So for me, the fact that it drew on fantasy really helped, because that I really enjoy fantasy anyway. And weaving in the mythology of the people really helped for me to get to the heart of what the culture of the country is like. So that's a book that I thought had that same effect.
I will just quickly mention, I think Sumitra should get the honour of going last because she brought Celestial Bodies to us. But I just wanted to talk a little bit about Pearl S. Buck, who is somebody that I started reading when I was in when I was a teenager, and who was really hugely influential for me in understanding China. And I suppose as a Malaysian of Chinese descent, China, I can't really say for sure if it interested me much. You know, it was a strange thing. It's kind of like, well, I know roughly, sure, my great-grandparents, you know, whatever. But when I read Pearl S. Buck's books, particularly The Good Earth, it just transformed how I thought about the country. And for a little period, I just got incredibly interested in China's history, in what happened with the Cultural Revolution, what happened with the birth of the Communist Party, or the Chinese Communist Party. It just kind of really ignited that for me. And The Good Earth is the telling of a peasant family, kind of a self-made man who goes from being, at the very beginning of the book, somebody who's going to buy his wife, all the way up to the dynasty, a modest dynasty, a dynasty within a town. He's gone from being a peasant to being a businessman, but a dynasty nonetheless. You know, it ends with him with a concubine, with squabbling sons, with a loss of a wife that he never fully appreciated. And just that growth of that story and that character, it just fascinated me. So yeah, Pearl S. Buck. It had her writing in general, but The Good Earth in particular.
So my recommendation is in a genre that I suppose could be considered fantasy, but perhaps closer to magical realism, Ben Okri's The Famished Road. I read that book when I was, I think, 15 going on 16. It opened my eyes completely. The town or the country that the book is set in, it's not named, but it's widely understood to be Nigeria or in a Nigerian town. And it tells the tale of a young spirit child who is unwilling to cross back to the spirit world, even though his spirit siblings are telling him, you must come back. But he's too enamored by the mortal world. He's got a mother, he's got a father, and he loves them deeply.
The reason why I chose this spirit child to write about is because he's, for me, a unique type of hero. He's a child who has a choice between eternity and mortality, but chooses mortality. This is a spirit child that chose to live this life. So what you have is somebody who has the capacity of a more beautiful existence, but has chosen to live a difficult one. And by following this child through reality, I begin to investigate reality afresh for the first time, magically. And he gives me that opportunity to look at life afresh.
There is a very interesting character who runs a bar, who perhaps is his friend, perhaps is his foe, he's not quite sure. And it introduced me to this idea that in many parts of Africa, spirituality and magical realism are not an alternative to life. They are threaded into everyday life. It is the other side of the coin of their being. And yeah, and he was the first African writer that I read, and certainly wasn't the last. So Ben Okri's The Famished Road.
When was the last time you read a book that introduced you to a new place, to an entirely new way of life, to a different society? When was that first time that you felt that, or when was the last time you felt that sense of travel, you know, and that sense of discovery? Let us know. You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899. You can tweet us at BFM Radio. You can write to us at buythebook@bfm.my. Sumitra, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
You've been listening to November's Book Club on Buy the Book at BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.